Yeah, I feel so sorry for that guy at the end. I mean, he just kept inching over. And everything, all his body language, right? He was staring at her like, what are you doing? You know, like, you are in my space. I experienced this week. I went somewhere this week, and my wife and I were sitting together, and there was a chair right next to us, and a guy came to sit down, and as he came over, he grabbed the chair and he moved it about 2 feet further away and then sat down. Somehow, it was just too close for the environment or where we were at. I came across a couple images of how maybe to deal with these personal space issues. This kind of cartoon is how to help someone who's invading your personal space learn to not be in your personal space. Yeah, you just lick them. I bet that girl would have got up if he'd have just licked her. I don't recommend that. I have always felt uncomfortable with the Renaissance and the paintings of Jesus' betrayal. Even as a kid, they made me feel uncomfortable. And I realized that Judas not only betrayed Christ and that was his sin, but I think he had some personal space issues as well. Every one of the pictures of Judas with Jesus are these kind of like awkwardly close kind of things. But we have this personal space need. And here's a diagram for personal space. Your intimate space is very, very close. What you call your personal space, you know, that maybe is about 2 feet or 3 feet. That's what you would consider your personal space. Then you have your social space where people can kind of be in, and then your public space, which is what we're in here. And so you have different feelings depending on the situation. Like, for example, if you're on a bus, there still is personal space, but it's a much closer ratio because of the seats and around you, just like here today. Most of you, when you come and you sit down, you create a one-chair space between you and the person next to you, unless the row is just filled up. It's just kind of normal. But if you're the only person sitting in here and someone else comes in, is one-chair distance okay? No, they need a few chairs, right? Or sit in a different section. It's weird. I can be out in the middle of a field all by myself, and someone else can come into the field, and my personal space at that point is about 50 yards. Inside 50 yards, I'm eyeing the person. What are they doing? You're getting too close to me. Imagine if we handled that way around here. You're within 50 yards of me. Personal space is important to us. Now, this series, Thrive, has been, it's been a touchy-feely kind of a series. But nothing like today's going to be. Because today, the message title is Our Need to Be Touched. Now, let me possibly calm some fears that you have today, because we have had some application interactive kind of things over these last few weeks. I am not going to ask you to touch anybody. And I'm not going to ask anybody to touch you today. I'm not going to orchestrate any kind of touching here. In fact, I'm going to let you know a couple things. If you don't know me very well, if you know me mildly well, you probably already know this. I'm not a toucher. Okay? I don't touch you, and I don't always like being touched. Okay? That's just how I'm wired. It's who I am. I can think of about a dozen different people that would be much better at giving a message about our need to be touched other than me. In fact, just looking out amongst the crowd here, my touchers. Pastor Brian, definitely a toucher. Elder Darren Davis, big toucher, I would say. Is Doug Reed here? Man, that guy just is always just... I'm not, Burke, toucher? Yeah, big toucher, I bet Burke is too. You know, look, I get it. There's people that just like to be around you and near you, and there's those that like to have a little bit of distance. But it doesn't change the fact that regardless of your bent towards your personal space, what you're comfortable with, who you like touching you, it doesn't change the fact that every single one of us have a need and a desire to be touched. Being touched and touching someone else is fundamental in our human interaction. And increasingly, many people are seeking more and more touch opportunities. There are what you would call professional touchers out there. Now, some of you go for one reason, others truly go for the experience of that one-on-one human contact. This would be things like, you know, a chiropractor or a physical therapist or a Gestalt therapist or Rolfers or Alexander Technique people, massage therapists, or even martial arts like Tai Chi and this touch. Doctors have reported that there are patients who come to a clinic or to an office for ailments that they don't even have, and when they boil it down, it's the human physical touch that they desire. They just make up symptoms so they can be seen and touched by another human being. You probably heard some of the studies that have been done on babies and touch for babies over the past few decades. I learned about this really when our church got more involved in adoptions, and I discovered through Cindy Cummins and the research that she had done, through many others of you who have been doing adoptions, that there are times that babies who are in a, maybe, let's say, an orphanage kind of a setting aren't getting the physical touch that they would receive from maybe an in-home kind of child experience with a mother or a mother and a father or a constant care provider. And as a result of that, they have what you would call kind of a touch deprivation. They're higher risk for behavioral, emotional, and social problems as they grow up if they lack that touch. Now, these trends point to some lasting effects of infancy touch environments and changes that happen in the development of that individual, changes in the brain, physical changes that undergo during that period. Below the surface, some children, being from these deprived surroundings, such as an orphanage, have vastly different hormone levels than those of what you would call a parent-raised peer. And even beyond just the baby years, the infancy years. For instance, according to a study from the development of psychopathy in Romania in the 1980s, by ages 6 to 12, levels of the stress hormone cortisol were still much higher in children who had lived in orphanages for more than 8 months than those who were adopted at or before the age of 4 months. Other work has shown that children who experience early deprivation also have different levels of oxytocin. Now, oxytocin is a hormone that's been linked to social and emotional well-being types of behavior. And despite having an average of at least 3 years in a family home, they still had this deficit. In fact, researchers led by Allison Wismer Fries of the Department of Psychology at the University of Wisconsin in Madison noted a study published in 2005 this. The environmental change into a home does not seem to have completely overridden all the effects of this early neglect of these children. Touch is important. Touch is important before we consciously know that touch is a need that we have. Infants need touch. Children need touch. If we don't physically touch, I'm not just talking pay attention to, I'm not talking about talking to, I mean touch. If we don't physically touch our children, it alters their brain. It alters the way their body functions, and not for a positive. And it doesn't change as we get older. In fact, studies have shown that hugging induces oxytocin, this hormone for well-being. Hugging. What's the minimum hugs per day? Anybody want to sing it for me? Yeah, there's a little song. 4 hugs a day. That's the minimum. 4 hugs a day. Not the maximum. Yeah, 4 hugs a day. I don't know if that's exactly true, But I do know that it creates this bonding hormone that reduces stress, it lowers the cortisol levels, and increases a sense of trust and security in us. In fact, according to some study conducted at the University of North Carolina, women who receive more hugs from their partners have lower heart rates and blood pressure and higher levels of oxytocin, just from hugs. Psychologist Matthew Hertenstein, he's a PhD and director of the Touch and Emotion Lab at DuPauw University, reported that touch deprivation is a real thing. Quote, he said, "Most of us, whatever our relationship status, need more human contact than we're getting. Compared with other cultures, we live in a touch-phobic society that's made affection with anyone but loved ones taboo." In fact, behavioral scientists have discovered that here in the U.S., our comfort zone or our personal space is about 2 feet to 4 feet, depending on the individual. But that is not the case in Latin America and the Middle East, where that distance has shrunk to about a foot. How would you feel 1 foot as your personal space? We keep touch at a distance, and I'm prime for that. But we all desire touch, and we have to tune into that. Now, even though I would put myself in a no-touch classification, I do like touch. I like it when my family hugs me for no apparent reason. I like it when Jenny reaches over and touches my arm or touches my hand when we're just sitting somewhere. I like to shake people's hands. I like that. I like a hand on my shoulder when, from a friend, especially when I'm hurting or going through a really tough emotional event. I like touch from my mom and dad. I take it anytime I can get it. Never grow out of that. But it doesn't mean I want you to touch me. It doesn't mean that I want to touch you. But if you need touch, I'm not only willing, but I'm honored to step in and to touch. To put a hand on your shoulder when you're hurting, to give you a reassuring hug, and I appreciate it in return. Now, I realize that when I talk about touching, there are two very different yet very alike types of touching. Today I am not going to deal with the sexual type of touch. We've discussed it before, and for what I want to talk about today, it's really not going to fit in. But I will say that the lack of non-sexual touch has confused sexual touch for a lot of people. And we can see that in various sexual offenses and promiscuity that are rampant in our culture. Because sexual touch is a touch that we need. But intimate sexual touch is something reserved for marriage. That's how God designed it, between a man and a woman in the bounds of a marriage relationship. Now, obviously the volume of unwanted pregnancies, the emotional problems that happen with teenagers as they engage in sexual activity, abortions, sexual crimes, sex outside of marriage regardless of the age, adultery, and inappropriate sexual touch between adults and children reveal that we have grossly, and I say grossly, deserted God's plan for this type of touch. So, I want you to try your best to set those definitions aside and realize that every time I say touch this morning, I mean non-sexual. If you blend the two, some of the things I say are going to sound really awkward. I'm not talking about sexual touch. I'm talking about the non-sexual type of touch. Skin on skin, because that's important in our touch with one another. But a type of touch that does not lead to sex. Now, I will also say that our personal and societal confusion over this issue of what touch is sexual and what touch is non-sexual makes this kind of touch, the non-sexual touch, difficult for many of us or confusing. But it's very important that we learn how to do this and see the importance of this in our lives and in the lives of those that we love. So, obviously, from the data that I have shared, and from maybe your own personal experience, we know the need for touch. Certainly as an infant, as a child, but we never grow out of the need for touch and human contact. Take, for example, holding hands. Who do you hold hands with? Parents, raise your hand if you've ever held the hand of your child, your kid. Okay, quite a few of you. Okay, parents, totally honest here. How many of you hold those children's hands, whatever age that was, on a regular basis? How many of you held their hands on a regular basis when they were 17? Couple. The Simons are actually holding hands right now. What is that? Like, I get it. Brad and I walking through the mall holding hands. I love him. I have no problem holding his hand. But I get it. There's something, I don't know. He's my son, right? When did the day stop? I remember it. I remember the last day I held his hand walking. And I knew at the moment that it was probably the last time. Because we were at that age. That age where we stopped touching. Now, I think, you know, parents like to blame their kids, you know. Well, they don't want to touch, you know. Or I want to give them a kiss before they head off to school, but they're like, not in front of my friends, you know. Well, push through that, folks. Just keep kissing and touching. But at the same point, I think there's something that happens in us, too. There's this transformation, this change that happens. And we need to resist that change. There's not good from that change. I came across an image of a father and a son holding hands. Perfect old photo, obviously. Front of their house, boys playing soccer ball, and dad's holding his hand. Last year, they recreated it. Can those two men hold hands? Of course they can. But are they going to in public? Are you going to think something strange when you see them holding hands, walking in the mall? I mean, in this, it's heartwarming. And you just want them to hold hands. But in the mall, you're not so sure. Touch is so important. Do you know that one of the things that was kind of striking to me, well, you know, when I was a kid, I held my mom's hand all the time. We'd go to the mall, go to the store, fabric stores. Oh, man, those are the worst. But wherever we'd go, grocery shopping, she held my hand. And we had a secret code I'll let you in on. We could be walking along, and I would feel two squeezes. Two squeezes translated to, I love you. My mom told me, anytime you feel two squeezes, that's me saying, I love you. And then I'd do two squeezes back. We had communication that nobody saw as we were holding hands. When I went to South Sudan, the chief of the tribe wanted to have a conversation with me. And he spoke very little English. And he stood up, came over to me. Someone said, he wants to talk to you. I stood up. He reached out his hand and took my hand, and we walked off holding hands. And I thought, this is the, I don't know where we're going. I don't know what we're doing. I discovered that that's a way of showing respect and friendship and care for another human being. Guys hold hands there all the time. Closer you are, the more odds you're going to hold hands. That was his way of saying, I respect you. And we walked off together. He spoke very little English. Hardly any words could he say, but he wanted to be in presence with me. Happens to our highest officials. In other countries, touch is different than we treat it here. And I don't think we have the corner market on what's right for touch, because I think we deprive each other of this kind of touch with one another that's important, because touch is a big deal. And touch is a big deal in the scriptures. There's a lot of examples of touch throughout the Bible. In fact, the church used touch to convey care and love and help and concern. And the church in Antioch, as Paul and Barnabas were getting ready to prepare for a missionary journey, the church came together, and here it says in Acts 13:3, "So after more fasting and prayer, the men laid their hands on them and sent them on their way." There was this touch, this presence of touch, and the touch is what prepared them. It was the coming together. It was love. It was care. It was support. It was encouragement. The touch, very, very important. Later in Paul's ministry, his own ministry, he used the tradition of touch in healing of people. We see that throughout the scriptures, that when someone touches, that healing would take place. Acts 28:8. "And it happened, as Publius' father was ill with fever and dysentery, Paul went in and prayed for him, and laying his hands on him, he healed him." And touch, still today, has healing power on you and on me. Because we do live in a touch-phobic society, and that has not helped us to discover and benefit from the power of touch. I need a volunteer that likes touch. Ryan Oaks, thanks for volunteering. Ryan, I don't know how touchable you are. You seem to me like more of a touchy kind of a guy.
I'm the middle of the road.
Middle of the road, okay. You're further along than I am. Okay, couple of things. Appropriate touch. Handshaking. See? Now, we're holding way too long. But now, handshaking is not soft. It's not this. I don't go... When someone does that, you feel like, what's going on? Are you dainty? Are you damaged?
Neither of us are dainty.
No, we don't look very dainty. But at the same point, it's also not this. We don't shake and then go, you know, bring someone to their knees, okay? Shaking hands isn't the opportunity to show your macho-ness or how tough you are or that you're superior to another human being. It negates the touch. Gentle firmness, not too hard, not too long. Okay? So it's a shake. Maybe just see how it's an actual little shake. Usually it's like one pump or two pumps, and that's good. Now some people like to touch some more. So it looks like this. How are you? Okay? You gotta be closer for that. Okay? And if you're real close to me, I'm not like super thrilled with it, but I'll accept it. Okay? Real close friends, it can be this and then on the shoulder, and sometimes you can even come in for the okay? Now, hugs for guys, first of all, generally, if it's not a loved one, it should be reserved between guys and guys. Gals can kind of broach that a little bit, but that's their own choice. But guys, it's kind of a hug, and it's a pat or two, and that's good. Okay, so we're going to hug now. Okay, here we go. See, just like that. Now, here, stand with your back to them. This is not a hug for guys. Okay? It may be soothing for some people, but...
Between me and them.
Yeah. How did that feel?
Really good.
Sometimes, if the situation is more intimate, a hand placed on the body appropriately is good too. A shoulder is always good. You know, if he's going through a hard time, I can relate with him this way. But there's no rubbing motion. It's just, yeah, there's just the hand, you know. Coming real close to someone, I can come in closer and put my arm all the way around, but it's going to be for something I'm going to say, and I'm going to step away. The firmness of your touch, the gentleness, everything communicates something. And you can't, thanks Ryan, you said it. Give him a hand. That was good. You can't go through life saying I'm not a toucher and not accept touch and not give touch. You also can't go through life saying I am a toucher and ignore the social graces of touching, because your touch will offend. Your touch will do the opposite of what you want it to do, and you can't just say everybody has to get over that. Some of us are touchers, some of us are not, but it does not mean that we all don't need touch, and it also doesn't mean that we all should not respect what touch needs to look like. There are social norms. We do have to pay attention to that. When someone's at a park bench, you do sit at a certain distance. If another bench is available, you sit at that bench. It is just how it is. The closer you are with a person, ignore the rules and get in and touch people. Your family, your kids, your parents, your brothers, your sisters. Touch. Never lose it. Because once you lose it, it's hard to get back. It's awkward. Dive in there and have appropriate touch with other people. There is power and there is healing in your touch. When you touch someone, it will bring healing power to that person, even if they're not in hurt or need. When you touch someone more often, that person is endeared to you more. They don't even know it. Parents to kids. Kids to parents. Mom and dad just being harsh on you, touch them more. Give them some hugs. Mom and dad might be going through a hard time. Parents with kids, more touch. It's good. In fact, there's a story in which Jesus did some touching with a man that had leprosy. Today we call leprosy Hansen's disease. If you don't know what it is a highly contagious bacterial infection. And those that have it are usually quarantined, still today, or separated from society into colonies, as it was in Jesus' day 2,000 years ago. So we had this situation where there's a man with leprosy, and again, think of what their medical understanding was even 2,000 years ago. They just basically knew that if you were around people with leprosy, you would get leprosy, and there was no cure for it, and it was devastating. And so here's a leper. This is a person you don't touch. And not because you don't want to, not because you're trying to be rude, but because it kills you. And lepers knew this too. Matthew chapter 8, some of the most amazing verses when it comes to touch. Listen to this. Large crowds followed Jesus as he came down the mountain. Suddenly, a man with leprosy approached him and knelt before him. Lord, the man said, if you are willing, you can heal me and make me clean. So this guy had seen Jesus do healings. And Jesus reached out and touched him. I am willing, he said. Be healed. And instantly the leprosy disappeared. This man was unworthy of Jesus' touch. And if I'm honest with you, sometimes I feel unworthy of touch as well. We feel like we've done things that disqualify us from Jesus' touch and his attention. And we act like we're lepers in front of him. But we need to remember that Jesus always has a desire to heal us. No matter what our ailment is, no matter what sin we've committed, no matter how much we've destroyed our lives and relationships, Jesus is present with us and wants to heal us. And he is willing. And the question is, are we willing to be healed? Listen to this story of touching in Matthew chapter 9. Just then a woman who had suffered for 12 years with constant bleeding came up behind him. That's Jesus. She touched the fringe of his robe, for she thought, if I can just touch his robe, I will be healed. And Jesus turned around when he saw her. He said, daughter, be encouraged. Your faith has made you well. And the woman was healed at that moment. You see, I think just like the woman, we seek and desire God's attention and his touch. And we need to remember that as we seek God's touch, we need to remember that God's desire is to touch us, to bring that healing into our lives that we need. And when you and I touch each other, when we touch each other, when we touch the people around us and next to us and those that we love and that God puts in our path, that God can touch us through others. And I think more than anything else, that when 1 John, the book says, the letter of 1 John says that God is what? Love. That to me, love is expressed through touch. And that as love is expressed through touch, I experience God's love through the touch of another. And that's why a hand on the shoulder is so helpful in a time of great distress. That's why a hug between friends has so much value and meaning. That means a handshake in which you make eye contact and you actually look genuinely interested in the person you're shaking hands with means so much. Because we're starving for touch. We all need this healing. We all need this love. And it's a gift that we can give through our touch of one another, our appropriate touch with others, because our heart desires touch. It may sound strange, but your challenge this week is to touch someone. Someone you maybe wouldn't have normally touched, or in a way you wouldn't have normally touched them. Remember my disclaimer earlier on? I know how this sounds. But you need to touch. Skin on skin. Appropriate touch. Express your love and let God's healing power happen through your touch. Can we do that this week? If we can do that, you might see a great transformation take place in some of your relationships.